From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. As of today, wearing face masks inside Juneau's public schools is optional. The district's Board of Education made the decision last month after the city's COVID-19 risk level was lowered. KTOO's Bridget Dowd visited three schools today to see how students and staff were feeling about the change.
Many of the students filing into Juneau Douglas High School, Yada Atkle, Monday morning were still wearing face coverings despite the change. Joelle Corpus was one of the students still wearing a mask.
I have a lot of upcoming things coming up with, like, the Alaskan Association of Student Government and a few interviews going on as well for a summer job. So I have a lot going on right now and just don't really want to risk it.
Corpus says it looked like most people in the school were still wearing masks that morning, but she expected people to take them off throughout the day because some students might not have known yet that masks were optional. A few minutes later, Esteban Demert was heading to class and had his mask pulled down to his chin.
I only brought a mask to, like, in case I go anywhere besides here.
Demert says he's looking forward to having a little more normalcy.
It's just going to be good to see people's faces again.
A few miles down the road at Riverbend Elementary School, Principal Elizabeth Peisel-Davis says kindergartners stared at her in amazement that morning as they unloaded from school buses.
Because I didn't have my mask on, they were looking at me with these big eyes, and I could just hear their thoughts of, whoa, that's what you look like?
By mid-morning, students were running around in gym class, mostly mask-free. Fourth grader Alani Zeller says she was excited to take her mask off.
When we are in gym, then we just sweat, then the sweat goes into your mask, and you have to change it all the time, and it breaks so easily. I'm kind of fed up about it.
Other students were looking forward to eating lunch without plastic dividers between them and their friends. Most of the staff appeared to be maskless, too. Natalie Ward teaches 4th and 5th grade at the school. She says most of her students weren't wearing them, but still respected those who were.
Some of them, I feel like I've never seen their full face before, so some of them were walking, and I was like, who is, oh my gosh, so-and-so.
Ward says she's happy to see their faces again, too, because reading aloud and communicating nonverbal cues was a struggle with masks on. But Riverbend 3rd grade teacher Christy Martz is keeping hers on for now.
You just never quite know what's going to happen. COVID's very good at throwing curveballs.
Mart says she hopes to protect her child, who's too young to be vaccinated. By early afternoon, it was a mixed bag at Zontakihini Middle School. Sixth grader Arielle Washington says most of the kids in her classes weren't wearing masks, and she wasn't wearing one either.
I think the virus is getting better as the days go on, so I'm just, like, honestly not wearing it as much. Sometimes I used to forget my mask, and if I forget my mask now, it doesn't really matter.
Other middle schoolers were still wearing face coverings because they were afraid it wasn't safe yet or because they didn't want to stand out among their peers. Masks are expected to remain optional in schools as long as Juneau is at a medium or low risk level. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
For more than 10 years, lawmakers have considered a massive overhaul of Alaska's laws governing the sale of alcohol in the state, but it hasn't happened as different interest groups have fought for their priorities. This year, the bill could cross the finish line and become law. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
People who've been watching the annual battle over a revision of the state's alcohol laws see signs of progress this year. And for a leading advocate for bars and other businesses that sell alcohol, that's a good thing.
I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to help the existing hospitality industry. This industry has suffered immeasurably over the last 2 years. We all know that. And it is still recovering.
That's Sarah Oates. She's the president of the Cabaret, Hotel, Restaurant, and Retailers Association. And she's talking about provisions of Senate Bill 9, the latest version of a bill that's kicked around year after year. This year, the most controversial provision has been one that limits the number of tasting rooms for breweries, distilleries, and wineries. Currently, there can be one for every 3,000 residents. Under the new law, there could be one for every 12,000. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Adam Wall is concerned about the change. He's a former bar owner who says limiting the number of new brewery tasting rooms will provide an advantage to existing breweries.
I don't think they're a bad influence on society. I worry about the business competition level playing field.
It's a point that's backed up by Sherry Stead, co-owner of Grace Ridge Brewing in Homer. She's concerned that the bill will prevent new businesses from opening.
It sets up monopolies in our small communities. limits competition, and stops future business growth across Alaska.
The leading legislator guiding the bill on its long path through the legislature is Soldotna Republican Peter Michicki, who's now the Senate president. He says the regulation on the number of tasting rooms is a compromise, just like dozens of other sections of the bill. He says it was worked out by a team of stakeholders.
We went back to the team and said, how can you come together as a team on expanding opportunities for breweries, distilleries, and wineries so they can succeed? People are voting with their feet. How can we do that and still not have a brewery on every corner? So this was the solution. That's why it's a compromise.
The law makes many other changes. It allows tasting rooms to stay open later, 10 p.m. instead of the current time of 8 p.m., but patrons would have to leave at 10, while they can linger with newly served drinks now. Michicki says legislators have a tendency to want to make changes to please one group or another, but the bill as it stands is a result of many, many compromises. He says the result is a bill that can serve as a model for what it takes to get something done in the Capitol.
So when we started these meetings, these people were 180 out, not even talking about these issues. They were talking past one another. It's a great model for the legislature. They got to the point of where they could agree on something where they're all equally unhappy with the outcome, but recognize the value of where we are.
The bill received support from nearly 40 people in public testimony recently, although a few asked that the limit on the number of tasting rooms be changed. The House Finance Committee is deciding whether to send the bill to the House floor. The Senate already passed the measure. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
As of Friday evening, 51 people filed to finish out Don Young's term in the U.S. House of Representatives. At least one, Jesse Sommer, has said he would drop out, saying he filed as an April Fool's Day joke. The election will be historic for several reasons. KUAC's Robin reports.
Of the 51 candidates, two are brothers, but one said he filed as a joke. Seven are former or current Alaska state legislators. One is in Montana, and two are in California. At least one is a felon. 22 aren't affiliated with a party. 17 are Republicans, 7 are Democrats, 3 are Libertarians, 1 candidate from the Alaska Independence Party, and 1 from the American Independence Party. Several interesting components of this race are unlike any other in Alaska's history. This special election will be the first to employ Alaska's new voting system. It begins with an open primary with all candidates on the same ballot, regardless of party. Voters pick one, only one. Here's Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai.
People only vote for one candidate, so we really are trying to stress that out to the electorate. Every race on a primary election is still a vote for one.
But how are all those names going to fit on the ballot, which has to be specially formatted and printed?
We have secured a ballot printer that has an adequate paper supply to be able to do the ballots. The envelopes was the more problematic area, but we have been able to secure a ballot printer who can also print our envelopes and get the ballots packaged and in the mail.
Oh yes, this election will be entirely by mail. That's also a first for Alaska. The division will start mailing ballots April 27th in order to give military members and other overseas voters enough time to mail them back.
So we're starting to send them then, but if people have mailing address changes, we have a process in place to send replacement ballots to people at a new address, while still maintaining the security and ensuring that only one ballot is returned back from that voter.
The registration deadline for the special primary is May 12th. So what about the candidates in California and Montana? How can they run for office in Alaska?
That is from the United States Constitution, which says that they have to be an inhabitant of the state when elected.
Fanumiai says residency for this office is defined in the U.S. Constitution, and states can't make requirements more restrictive than that. Some of the candidates running in the special election are also running for the seat in the regular term that starts January 2023. But the filing deadline for that is not until June 1st. Candidates have until noon today to withdraw their candidacy. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And a quick update on that. The Associated Press reports today that three of the 51 candidates had dropped out by the deadline. Some Alaska Native tribes are getting behind U.S. Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. One of the tribes supporting Jackson is Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. President Chafyeish Richard Peterson says that while she doesn't have the most experience in Indian country, Jackson is by far the most qualified candidate nominated to the Supreme Court in recent years.
So I think her given aptitude for it is a plus for us. You know, we want people to adjudicate on the letter of the law, and we think the letter of the law favors a lot of the tribal cases.
Other tribes and tribal organizations across the state have sent letters of support to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee are pushing for a vote tonight to move her nomination to the full Senate, and they hope to get Jackson confirmed before they go on Easter recess this weekend. And earlier today, Senator Lisa Murkowski announced that she would support Jackson's nomination. If confirmed, Jackson would be the first black woman to serve in the nation's highest court. And finally, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland plans to visit Alaska this month. The trip is expected to include a visit to King Cove, the community at the heart of a long-running dispute over a proposed land exchange aimed at building a road through a national wildlife refuge. Haaland had planned to visit King Cove last year, but the trip never materialized. The Interior Department on Monday said Haaland planned to visit several communities and sites in Alaska the week of April 17th, including Anchorage, Fairbanks, and King Cove. Residents of King Cove have long sought a land connection through Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge to Cold Bay, which has an all-weather airport. They call it a safety issue. The refuge contains internationally recognized habitat for migrating waterfowl. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, April 4th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.